chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's the can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire, now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hey y'all, I'm Bud Elliott, and this is Cover 3 College Football Summer School. We've done our research on the teams, and now we're bringing on the top team experts from the 24/7 Sports Network to help us fill in the blanks. Please follow us on Twitter at Cover 3 Podcast. That's Cover 3 Podcast. And leave us a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify. All right, class is in session. Hey guys, Bud Elliott here, and I'm back with another edition of Summer School on the Cover 3 Podcast, where we're taking all the big college football teams, going over them, checking my notes, talking to the 24/7 sports experts to see what we got right, what we got wrong, what we need to know about these squads as we enter summer and into fall camp. Transfer portal deadline coming up as we record this as well. And today, we're going to talk about a program that's had a lot of turnover and a lot of positive vibes going on right now, and that's the Oregon Ducks. We're going to bring on Matt Prim of our 24/7 sports duck territory to talk about it.
Hey guys, how's it going?
What's going on, man? Just checking his roster out and looking like things are probably not going to miss a beat too much up there. I would suspect North champions last year and another strong season for the Ducks.
Yeah, there's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of optimism right now around this football program. Certainly there was a little bit of anger, confusion, doubt when Crystal Ball left. I think at the beginning of the 2021 season, few people at Oregon in that facility, the fan base, didn't think he was going for a while. I don't think anyone really had locked in that he was going to be there forever, but it wasn't going to be in December that he would be gone. And when Lanning showed up, I think coming from Georgia, winning a national championship, and then just the persona he has really won over this fan base and this athletic department. Crystal Ball and Lanning are very similar and yet very far apart at the same time. I think that's a big reason why a lot of the optimism is here. The focus, the intensity for on-field coaching, for recruiting is very similar. But Mario was very old school football guy centric, very robotic. And Lanning is very much a people person. Is very outgoing, connects with anybody, it feels like. And that's resonated pretty well.
No doubt about it. Last year overall, 10-4, the power ratings didn't like them quite as much. I think the combination of the power ratings, what Vegas has, like 38th, but still a quality year. Actually led by the offense, 22nd rated offense, really efficient run game. Passing game, okay. And then when it came to time to hit explosive plays, really just weren't there. It's a little more sloggy than I guess Oregon fans haven't grown up on, Chip and all the great quarterbacks they've had there would probably like. But Bo Nix comes in this year. What are you expecting with Bo Nix and new offensive coordinator Kenny Dillingham?
Yeah, it's hard to be a quarterback at Oregon. There's a lot of expectations, and to be honest, some of it's kind of unfair or unrealistic because just of the run of guys that they've had. Akili Smith, Joey Harrington, Kellen Clemens, Darren Thomas, Mazzoli, Mariota, Herbert, Vernon Adams. All those guys are like some of the best quarterbacks in college football during the years that they were in school. And so that's kind of the expectation. Like when you get to Oregon, which is kind of ridiculous that you've got to be a top 10 quarterback nationally. And for Bo, it's you know, there was certainly some, really, they're taking Bo Nix. That's strange. He beat Oregon in 2019. Bo Nix wasn't really the phenomenal at Auburn. That's the guy that they're gonna take. But as he's been with the program, as he's spoken with the media, and certainly with the spring game and his performance, the more he's out in public, the more he wins over the program and the fan base. I think the expectation for Bo is he's the shot caller for one of the best offenses in the country. And I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that they're going to be top five, that they're going to be top 10, but the expectation is they're a top 25 offense. They're prolific in running and throwing the football, and he's going to be the trigger man for that. That's kind of the expectation.
One of the real changes for Bo Nix probably will be that he'll have a lot better protection up front, I would guess, at Oregon. Looking at this depth chart, you can say what you want about Cristobal managing an offense. And I think there is something to be said for maybe him having his thumb on it a little bit too much compared to maybe what Moorhead perhaps wanted to run at times. But Cristobal did recruit the offensive line well generally, and all but one dude up there of consequence is back. So that this front line should be really an exceptional unit, right?
Yeah, it will be the best offensive line Bo Nix will play with in his college career. They don't have a Penei Sewell on roster. And what I mean by that is like a first round NFL left tackle, or even just a first round draft pick. But Alex Forsythe, their starting center, TJ Bass, a guy that's played guard and tackle, Malasala Almuve, and then Steven Jones. Those four are all NFL guys, and they all had to make decisions last season, go pro or come back, play for a new staff. They all chose to come back. They will all be, I would expect all of them to be on an NFL roster in some capacity, whether it's a draft pick or an undrafted free agent going into training camp next year. And then Ryan Walk is a former walk-on who I think is their best offensive lineman. He just doesn't have the measurables that the other ones do. He's like a 6'2" guard. Very, very athletic, really good. If he was 6'4", he would be a household name. And then they added Josh Connerly Jr., 5-star offensive tackle in 2022. He will help. Dawson Jaramillo was a utility guy last season. He will be in that same role this year. So yeah, they're loaded up front. And that's a big reason why there's optimism that Bo Nix will be better at Oregon this season from internally at Oregon, because his protection will be as good as it's ever been in his career.
And obviously he's worked with Coach Kenny Dillingham before, when Dillingham was at Auburn. So there's the familiarity there. That Matt, the one question I have for you on the offense before I switch this over to the defense is they did lose a lot of targets at the receiver position. So Devin Williams, Johnny Johnson, Jalen Redd, Micah Pittman are all cross-offs on my sheet. All four of those guys are gone, correct? Now, Chase Cota from UCLA comes in, but is this a concern?
I think to a degree. Pittman never really materialized at Oregon. He was either hurt or inconsistent. But nonetheless, he was a 4-star guy. There was a lot of expectations that he would be really good. Jalen Redd, pound for pound, I think is the toughest Oregon player in the last 10 years, and that will be missed. His just leadership and his commitment to his team is just one of those guys that just doesn't put up amazing numbers, but just always seemed to make the play when it was needed. And then Devin, like you said, went pro. Johnny Johnson, solid guy. But the guys that are replacing them are all high profile recruits. They were all way more sought after by colleges across the country. And so the talent on paper is going to be an upgrade. You know, Dante Thornton, Troy Franklin, Chris Hudson, those guys were all highly recruited receivers. Seven McGee has moved from running back to receiver. And based on the spring game, it amazing decision by Oregon staff to do that. He was tremendous. And so there's the optimism here. The thought process here is they've got the talent. The issue is they don't have a lot of bodies. Like, I think they went into spring camp, which is 9 scholarship receivers. Coda has been added to the mix. Kyle Casper, a 2023 recruit, reclassified. Don't see that very often in football. What's a realistic expectation for a reclass guy? I don't know that answer. They feel good about their, you know, 3 or 4 guys in the room, but behind that, there's not a lot of depth. And so I would worry. Injuries happen in football at every position. And what's going to happen when the receiver room gets hit with 1 or 2 injuries?
No doubt about it. Let's sort of switch over to the defensive side here. It took a step back, I think, last year. No two ways about it. I mean, 60th in total defensive efficiency. I felt like they were decidedly more bend but don't break than they had been in prior years. Like they didn't allow explosive plays at a high rate, but they allowed sustained drives much more than I would have expected for an Oregon defense. I assume part of that is the, you know, the coaching change they had entering, you know, last year, right? But
yeah,
ultimately, little too bend but don't break for my taste. But when you have the speed that Oregon would seem to have.
There was a running joke that whenever Oregon would get into a 3rd and long situation on defense, the opposing team would, got you right where we want you. Because 3rd and long, like you said, that Oregon was so committed to not getting blown off over the top. They would give up the 3rd and 8, the 3rd and 12 plays consistently. The defensive coordinator was Tim DeRuiter. It was his first year. There was a lot of optimism when he showed up because, ironically enough, the team that's given Oregon fits the most the last couple of years in the Pac-12 North from a defensive perspective has been Cal. And so there was a lot of like, hey, we just stole the coordinator. He's going to help us. And that never really happened. I think injuries also played a factor in that. Everyone goes through injuries, but I would be shocked if you could find me another team that suffered the amount of injuries and the length that those injuries were going on than Oregon. Thibodeau was hurt for a while. His replacement, Braden Swenson, was hurt for a couple of games. They had 3 linebackers in the inside all go down, including 2 starting guys, Justin Flo, Drew Mathis, in the first 2 weeks of the season. You know, the list goes on and on. And so I think a defense that was so concerned about getting beat deep and not allowing explosion plays combined with injuries really prevented this defense from playing its true potential. Because you're right, like, they took a big step back. 2019, they were one of the best defenses in the country. I mean, they were straight up loaded.
Yeah.
And you could not score on them. You could not run on them. And they had lockdown corners. And to look at where they were in 2019 to 2021, with a lot of guys still on the team from those 2 squads, they're night and day.
No doubt about it. I know they lose Kayvon Thibodeau, but they bring back almost everybody else of importance along that front 7, it seems. Am I crazy to think they can hold serve their front 7 or maybe even take a step forward, given that KT did miss a lot of time?
The guys on Odds and Audibles, the show we do for Duck Territory, we just kind of talked about that after the spring game. Like, we were running through just the depth charts and, you know, updating things, and we were like, are we crazy? But we think the D-line might be even better than what we anticipated, and we were already kind of high on that group. They don't have the pass rusher that Thibodeau was on roster. I mean, maybe Braden Swenson turns into that. I mean, go pop on the Ohio State film. He played in Thibodeau's spot in that game because Thibodeau was hurt, and he was tremendous until he himself got hurt in that game late in the 4th quarter. DJ Johnson, a former tight end who's now playing strictly defense.
The Miami transfer, right?
Yeah, Miami transfer. Okay. He had 4 sacks in Oregon's spring game, and he could have had a couple more if they allowed the play to continue. So 2 names there to maybe see things play out from an edge rush perspective. But up front, they are really good. Popo Amave and Brandon Dorlus were two of the five best interior defensive linemen in the Pac-12 by Pro Football Focus. They're both back. And then they went and added Sam Tiamani from UW, who was also in that top five. So, like, the expectation up front is they've got dudes, and it's going to be really tough to run on Oregon, because then you pair with a Noah Sewell and a Justin Flo, who's healthy, and Jeffrey Bossa, who replaced Flo as a true freshman last year. He moved from safety to linebacker, a kid from Utah. Absolutely tremendous player. Really, really good. To the point where I don't think Flo is an automatic starter for Oregon next season, just because of the injury and just because of how good Bossa was. I think those will be your big three, and all three will play a ton, but I just don't automatically put Flo number one in the depth chart.
No doubt. excuse me, Matt, we'll get you out of here on this. Really appreciate Matt Prim's time from Duck Territory and the Austin Audibles podcast. I feel like the secondary is the one question on this team that I really have. Like receiver, I feel like Oregon recruits enough athletes that they'll be okay. DB, though, it kind of scares me. Four of the top five are gone. There's a weakness on this team or a real unanswered question. I think it's DB, right?
Yeah. Thibodeau gets a lot of the attention from last season, the last couple of years. But he wasn't the only All-American on defense that Oregon had last year. That was Verone McKinley, the other one. He's safety. He's now gone. He went pro. He will get drafted. His nickname was the General, and he was probably one of the smartest players we've seen come through Oregon in a long time. His dad played pro football. He just knew everything. Got guys in position, made checks, all of that. That's a big loss. And then on top of that, Mykael Wright went pro. DJ James transferred. He was supposed to be the heir apparent lockdown guy after Mykael Wright. He transferred to Auburn, which was a bit of a surprise because he started last season. He was really good. He played a lot in 2020. Expectations, he'd be here. He's no longer here. And so they went out and hit the portal. They got Christian Gonzalez from Colorado, really good player, honorable mention, Pac-12 guy. They moved Triquez Bridges from corner to safety. Bridges played a lot last season. But they don't have a lot of production. I mean, Jamal Hill's back. He played a lot in 2020 on that championship team. And then 2021, he lost his job to Bennett Williams before Bennett was down for a season-ending injury early in the year. He was having potential all-conference, all-American maybe season before he got hurt. But they don't have much. They don't have a lot of depth. Cornerback is scary. I mean, it's Christian Gonzalez and a bunch of guys that haven't played. In the Pac-12 too, where a lot of teams are pass-oriented offenses, that's scary. I mean, Washington State, they always give teams fits, especially Oregon. Stanford BYU and their tall can receivers. Throw it
now too.
Yeah, and then you throw in, you get through the North and you go to the Pac-12 championship game. You're probably playing a Utah team who is just unbelievably physical, or the other option is USC, who's going to just throw a ton of receivers out there. So,
yeah,
I think the cornerback in particular, but the DB room in general is a big concern. And if they have the spots if they get spots to open up from a depth chart perspective, they're at 85 right now. If one or two guys transfer out, which wouldn't surprise me, I would think they look at the portal to see who's out there from a cornerback perspective. You have one guy that's played substantial snaps.
What kind of stinks for DJ James is he transferred out. He's an Alabama kid, but I looked at the timeline here. 10 days after he transferred to Auburn, their defensive coordinator Derek Mason left for Oklahoma State. So. Yeah, it may not impact.
It was a weird decision. I mean, and that's one in which it was out of Lanning's hands. I don't even think he'd really even stepped foot on campus for more than 48 hours before he left. So you really can't fault Lanning for not being able to keep him. But it was just one where it was just like, man, that hurts because he was supposed to be your number one, and then he bolts.
No doubt. Matt Prim, Duck Territory, really appreciate the time today here on the Cover 3 Podcast, Summer School Edition, talking all things Oregon. Love to have you back on this fall to talk a little more Oregon, a little season preview, a little Pac-12 chatter. Matt, really appreciate the time, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob? Well, all
right. Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year. You dig? Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hey, guys. I'm Bud Elliott, and welcome back in to College Football Summer School, a production of the Cover 3 Podcast. And today, we're going to talk a little Oregon State with the help of Carter Baines, beat writer for Beaver Blitz. And last year, we had Carter on for our 24/7 Sports Around the Clock series. And guys, I got to tell you, Carter, he was on. He's like, this Oregon State team, they can make the leap. They can go bowling. Maybe they can go bowling plus one or two. And guys, he knows what he's talking about. So Carter, man, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Just wrapped up spring ball here a couple of weeks ago. So football's still fresh in my mind, even though we're fully diving into the offseason here.
No doubt about it. So Oregon State played as a top 50 level team in most of the power ratings for the first time in quite some time. Just a tremendous job by that coaching staff there. Continue to kind of get guys to fit their system and develop them up. And mood got to be pretty happy right now, I would assume.
Yeah, I think things are still kind of moving in a positive direction at Oregon State right now. News-wise, this offseason's been pretty quiet. You know, it's not like Oregon State's brought in any big-name transfers or anything yet. I wouldn't count that out. I still think there's a lot of potential for, some big things to happen over the offseason. But mostly it's just been, kind of grinding through spring camp, a subdued spring game. You know, there was no it wasn't a live game format. It was just kind of a glorified practice, I guess. Like I said, the mood isn't like, people aren't like over the moon right now, but I think it's just kind of the nature of this being the off season. And once the fall rolls back around, I think fans are going to be really excited to see if this team can take the next step, and start to compete for the Pac-12 North title.
No doubt about it, which, I mean, just the fact that you just said that is a testament to how good a job the staff has done so far, I think, given where they were 4 or 5 years ago. This offense last year was dynamite, a top 20 opponent adjusted offense, put up points on most everybody, really, really good ground game. What do we call it? Opportunistic, I guess, passing game, maybe take advantage of play action and multiple formations, motion, whatnot. I want to start not negatively, but just I want to get your opinion on this. So they were in the JT Daniels sweepstakes, obviously, and JT went to West Virginia, transferring from Georgia. Chance Nolan returns, though, at quarterback. That they were going after JT, does that say something about Nolan's ceiling? What do you read into that, if you do?
I think it was more just kind of a testament to a potential lack of depth in the quarterback room. You're bringing back Chance Nolan, obviously, but Tristan Jebbia comes back after a really serious hamstring injury, so you have no idea what you're going to get out of him. Outside of that, the only other scholarship quarterback on the roster right now is a freshman in Ben Gulbranson, who's still, as far as playing experience goes, he's only played one drive in his college career, and he's coming off an injury himself. So there's really only one proven guy in that room, and it's Nolan. And so I think the coach has recognized, if we can bring in a guy who can, at the very least, create some competition, that's going to be a good thing. But obviously, if JT Daniels were to transfer to Oregon State, I think he, pretty clearly comes in as the favorite to win the job. it's unfortunate that they miss out on it because, man, I think they were in a great place to potentially land him. I actually saw him, taken in practice one day during spring camp. I know he was on campus for 2 days and by all accounts had a great visit. I think I left that that situation feeling pretty confident about Oregon State's chances to land him. Obviously, they couldn't close the deal. In the days since, Oregon State fans have kind of started to raise some questions about this coaching staff's ability to close on big time recruits and to bring in quarterbacks. Because you look at the staff, and Jonathan Smith and Brian Lindgren are two of arguably the best quarterback coaches out west, but their inability to land a big time quarterback, I think, is starting to raise some eyebrows, especially after what happened with Braden Dorman a couple of months earlier, a 4-star quarterback who, by all accounts, was, you know, a lock to come to Oregon State and then flipped to Arizona at the very last minute.
For sure. That's a legit question. Receiver wise, they lose Bradford, but pretty much everybody else who caught a pass for them, or at least a decent number of passes, is back. If JT had come, certainly, or, you know, Nolan or Tristan Jebbia, they got a lot of pretty good players to throw the ball to. Like, they've got to be feeling fairly good about the skill position core, right?
Yeah, and that was part of the reason that I felt, you know, fairly confident in Oregon State's landing JT Daniels, was that it was a great landing spot for him. You know, he comes in and he has an offensive line that was arguably one of the top five groups in the country last year. A stable of running backs that's always elite. And then, like you mentioned, the wide receivers. Now, the depth in the receiving core has kind of dropped off a little bit in the last couple of weeks. Zariah Beeson just entered the transfer portal and committed to Washington State. Champ Flemings, who's caught a ton of passes in his career out of the slot, just committed to Arkansas State. So two of the more experienced guys in that room have entered the transfer portal recently, but still coming back. You know, you've got Trayshawn Harrison, Tyjon Lindsey, and a bunch of younger guys. Anthony Gould, Silas Bolden are two guys who really stood out to me in spring camp. Silas Bolden in particular had two touchdowns in the spring game, so I think he could really step up and bring something new to this offense as well. But yeah, the skill positions, you know, for the depth that they have lost throughout the spring, I think what they bring back too is really exciting. And this Oregon State offense, to be honest, could be as good, if not better, than last year.
Staying on the offensive side for one last question there. The offensive line does lose two starters. You know, Eldridge was an All-Pac-12 guy. And then I'm not even going to try to pronounce the other dude's name. If you can, please.
Yeah, that's Noose Kayobunim.
Kayobunim. Okay, that's much simpler than I thought it was going to be. Are you projecting a drop-off here or just kind of status quo? Obviously, they were very good last year, but those are two pretty good guys to lose.
I think it'll be somewhat similar as far as what they're able to do. Losing those two guys, obviously, that's a challenge. Eldridge was a two-time all-first-team Pac-12 center. And so losing kind of the cornerstone of one of the best offensive lines in the country, you know, that's almost impossible to replace right away, unless you go to the transfer portal. But what this offensive line returns is three veteran starters: Brandon Kipper, Joshua Gray, Jake Levengood, and then two guys that saw a lot of playing time last year as well, in Marco Brewer and Taliesa Fuaga, who are two younger guys who kind of worked their way into the rotation and then actually both started a game or two. So I don't see much of a drop-off with that starting group. Where the concern lies is their backups. There were a ton of injuries to the second and third team groups in the spring. And I think the coaching staff is a little bit concerned with the depth on the offensive line. If everyone stays healthy, it's going to be a great year. I see another really dominant rushing game. But if anybody goes down, there could be some struggles there.
For sure. And Deshaun Fenwick has a chance to step up, obviously, with B.J. Baylor departing. And that's – I just never worried about running backs and Jonathan Smith. I feel like they're always going to have somebody who's good, and they put them in a position to succeed.
Yeah, Fenwick's right there. I think, you know, Trey Lowe, what he gave them last year after transferring from Washington, particularly in a third-down role, he really excelled there. And I like what he brings as a receiver as well. But the one guy who has stood out in that running back room this spring, and who I think Oregon State fans are over the moon about, I know I am, is true freshman Damian Martinez, who came in from Texas. You know, he played big school high school football in Texas, ran for a ton of yards, he came in as an early enrollee and just kind of ran away with things. He was far and away the most productive running back that Oregon State threw out there this spring. And, you know, it's not something that we've really seen under Jonathan Smith, having a skill position guy or really any contributor come in as a true freshman and lock up a job. But if anyone is going to come out of this committee as the featured back, as a guy who could take the lion's share of the carries, who could contend for an 1,000-yard season, Damian Martinez as a true freshman would be the guy to bet on.
All right, let's switch to the defensive side here. You called this one last year as well. Like, you didn't think it was going to be a good defense. You just thought it would be improved and not one of like the absolute worst in the Power Five, which it was in 2020 and in 2019. But the top two guys at defensive tackle, at least listed as D tackle, are gone in Shad and Skelton. How big of a concern is that for you?
Huge concern. It has been the main weakness on this team for the last 4.5 years, ever since Jonathan Smith came here. A lack of depth on the defensive line, and particularly in the middle. Oregon State runs a 3-4 scheme. And as we know, if you're running a 3-4, you need a big body in the middle who can kind of, you know, take up two guys and create some lanes for your other pass rushers. They haven't had that. And this year it's, you know, that depth, it's razor thin. There were a couple of injuries in the spring, and what we saw is, you know, guys are running with the first and second team. You've got outside linebackers lining up at D end to fill in some spots. And, you know, it's a concern. It has been for the last couple of years. And I don't think they've really shown anything or done anything on the recruiting trail or via the transfer portal to alleviate my concerns there. What I will say is, what this defense can do this year is make up for its personnel deficiencies schematically. Trent Bray comes in in his first year as the full-time defensive coordinator. He took the interim job last year after Tim Tibisar was fired after a really poor performance against Colorado on the road. And what Bray brings is a really aggressive scheme. It's one that's going to throw all sorts of blitzes at these Pac-12 offenses. It's one, you know, you're going to see linebackers in the backfield with a ton of regularity. And early indications from spring camp are that, you know, these players have fully bought into it. And what I saw is a defensive front seven that created all sorts of havoc for Chance Nolan, Tristan Jebbia, and Ben Gulbranson in the backfield, which is a great sign because, you know, to be honest, your defense should be ahead of your offense in the spring. But I hadn't seen that at Oregon State over the last 4 years. So to see that finally kind of come to fruition is, you know, for as many concerns as I still have, it's exciting to see.
So losing the two backers, Roberts and Hughes Murray, not as nearly as big of a concern for you as the 2D tackles, I assume.
No, I don't think so. Actually, I'm pretty high on the outside linebacker room.
Okay.
Andrew Chatfield comes in from Florida. You know, he was somewhat of a role player there early on in his career, and he comes in here and I think is a lock to start on the edge. He could be an absolute difference maker there. At inside linebacker, Kyrie Fisher is stepping in for Avery Roberts, and I think could be as productive as Roberts. This defense is really catered to, you know, putting inside linebackers in positions to make tackles on every play. The defense runs around those two guys. And Fisher has shown, you know, every bit of playmaking ability that it takes to play that position in the Oregon State defense.
So one thing that's got to be kind of excited here is you're mentioning that under the new DC, a lot more blitzing, you know, more exotics, trying to force the issue and create pressure. Having a secondary that loses, I don't have any cross offs on my sheet. Elijah Jones, I guess. I don't know why I crossed him off. I must have read something at some point. He may still be there. Like, every single person is back?
Yeah, everyone except for Jones. He was a redshirt senior last year, okay. so he just ran out of eligibility. He wasn't even really a contributor last year, to be honest. So, yeah, as far as, you know, your starters and your immediate backups go, everybody is back. The one guy that I am still kind of keeping an eye on is Alton Julian, who tore his ACL last year. Whether or not he's able to go is still kind of up in the air, but if he is, he slides in as one of the two starting safeties and a guy who I thought really broke out last year before he had that ACL injury. But what I've been saying all spring is that this secondary is the best that Jonathan Smith has had at his disposal, and it's the absolute strength of this defense. So, I think the secondary has actually been pretty solid the last couple of years. It just doesn't show because Oregon State hasn't been able to pressure the pocket. Obviously, right. If you're letting quarterbacks, work all day back there, that makes it makes life pretty tough on your DBs. But from what I've seen under Trent Bray at DC is, there is more pocket pressure that allows things to kind of develop more in Oregon State's favor downfield. And I think if that translates to the games, they should be able to capitalize on what I think is, like I said, the best crop of defensive backs Oregon State's had under Jonathan Smith.
No doubt about it. I mean, I don't think I'm picking this team to win the North, but if you look at the schedule, your four road games are at Arizona State, at Washington, at Stanford, at Utah. I mean, I don't know what Washington's going to look like. I like how they get Arizona State way late in the year when it could just be total collapse mode, potentially, given all the guys who are exiting their program as we speak today. At Stanford is not particularly intimidating to play. This could set up if things can click and they can kind of, crush fingers that they stay healthy along the interior defensive line. They could have a special run here.
Yeah, I think a top two finish in the Pac-12 North is within the realm of possibility here. I actually, I kind of made a bold prediction when the JT Daniels sweepstakes was at its peak. I said if Oregon State lands Daniels, this is a Pac-12 North title team. So I think that they were that close to getting over the hump. And so, without Daniels, obviously things become a little bit more difficult. You're relying on Chance Nolan to get things done on the offense. And I think, he still has a decent amount to prove there, but the pieces are there for Oregon State to win 8 or 9 games. It just they just need a couple of breaks to go their way this year. And I look at what they did last year. They won 7 games and, to be honest, lost 2 games against Colorado and California that they should have won. This team could have very well been a 9-win team last year. And I think what they bring back compared to what they lose, this team is no worse than they were last year. So 7 wins should be the expectation. But I think fans should be optimistic about their ability to win 8 or 9.
No doubt about it. Carter Baines, Beaver Blitz, really appreciate you joining us here on the Cover 3 College Football Podcast for our summer school edition. And we'll have to have you back on come fall.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always a blast.
All right, that's the bell. Cover 3 College Football Summer School is over for today. But don't worry, we'll be back soon with even more episodes filling you in on the top teams in college football. Please give us those 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Follow us on YouTube and on Twitter at Cover 3 Podcast. And we'll see y'all soon.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top 5 leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.